Senate Special Committee on Healthcare Reform. This is Monday, March 26, 2007. After Ben and I and many others have been out on this magical mystery tour for the last week, we don't even know what date is half the time or what town we're in. You know, it's one of those things. If this is Grants Pass, it must be Friday, you know, kind of thing. But we had a great tour. Ben can give you some details of it, too. The public support for healthcare reform is pretty overwhelming. And it's not just advocates showing up. It's the average citizen saying, we want this thing fixed, we want it fixed now, start moving us forward. And it was very, very interesting to have those town halls. They're getting bigger everywhere we go. Numbers of people involved are bigger, and it's not just the people you normally would think would be there. And so it was very reassuring to go out and do that. It was a little exhausting, but a lot of fun, too. Ben?
Well, I would just expand on that. Yeah, we did six town halls in 48 hours, everything from Coos Bay to Klamath Falls, and it was a exhausting experience, but it was a tremendous experience at the same time. And Representative Maurer was at one, and we have the reps from the given areas show up, and it was almost every age demographic, and it wasn't just advocates, it wasn't just access people, you know, we need healthcare. Business community showed up saying we can't afford this anymore. It was a fairly overwhelming indictment on the present system just in terms of cost. And like I always say, if we can't lower cost, we've got nothing. It was very affirming.
It really was. And one of the testimonies I remember most was actually occurred in Klamath Falls. We had a young lady there who is an intake worker for the state and qualifies people for the health plan or not, and her statements to us were absolutely gripping of the kind of people she deals with every day, hard-working Oregonians with no health care, and she has to say no to them. And she was almost in tears explaining what that's like to somebody who's working hard every day, doesn't have access to health care, has somebody sick in the family, and can't get them good care without waiting through the disease process late and sending them off to an emergency room. So, in fact, we were so impressed by her, we're asking her to come up and speak before the committee. That is just gripping testimony you can't turn your back on. So having said that, I'll make an announcement here. Wednesday night, you guys got off. Enjoy your spring break. We're not gonna have a meeting Wednesday night. We will pick it up again next Monday night. We're going to be working real hard to take care of some issues in the bill that need to. It's more craftsmanship than anything significant as far as big changes. It's time to roll up our sleeves and get some hard work done. So everybody in the committee and out through the audience, enjoy your Wednesday evening, okay? And be thinking of us, okay? But we'll get back to you on the following Monday.
One further comment, Mr. Chair. I'd like everyone to meet Alex Moore. He's our new intern, so when things are going good, come to me. When things are going bad, handle. My announcement.
Okay, Alex, we're starting right now.
Yeah, here. You want to take this right here?
Rick, you're going to walk us through some information here real quick.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. In your packet materials are several items. Some of these are follow-up materials in response to some questions that came up in the last couple of meetings. In your packet is one document. These are from the Oregon Health Policy Research Office. The first one's called Healthcare Reform Reference, 2008 Oregon Healthcare Spending Estimates. This document actually emanated from the interim when our own Legislative Revenue Office, John McConnell, Bill Kramer, and some others got together and tried to look at some of the data and how much actually healthcare spending, how many dollars were in the system in Oregon. There was some debate about this at the last meeting, I believe. So in this paper are, again, some 06 and 08 projected numbers. It's important to note that the Medicaid number in under 206 and 08, the $1.9 billion and $2.2 billion, are acute health care only and not long-term care dollars, so that those are broken out separately. I also see Tina Evelyn here, so if there are specific questions on these documents, at some point we can call her up. The second document is healthcare affordability in Oregon. I believe this more or less emanates from the Health Policy Commission report, which asked and recommended a look at how much people can actually afford for health care versus just what maybe should be subsidized based on a federal poverty level, for example. So this looks at housing, food, child care, other necessities, and then breaks out by federal poverty level of people and how much might be available for health care after adjusting for these other necessities of life. Then there's a spreadsheet, Oregon adults over 18, distribution of uninsured by poverty level. I believe, Chair Bates, you might have asked the question about how the 460,000 people, uninsured Oregonians, break out in terms of federal poverty level and how that's distributed amongst just that population, and then what the income range is when we look at those. So this kind of goes across and gives you that information at a glance from below 100% to 400% and higher. And then last, there's just a letter in here from a employer recommending that when we look at healthcare insurance and carriers that we take into account their working with their own carrier. And then on the agenda tonight, you did want to look at public testimony, kind of open testimony on the 31207 version of Senate Bill 329. That version is in your packet. Basically looking at sections 2 through 6, the composition and structure of the trust board, and seeking input from public and others about their thoughts on that section. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. The reason we're looking at the trust board, I'll share a little bit of some of the things that were discussed on the road, so to speak. One of the questions that came up repetitively is whether or not we're looking at touching the monies that go into long-term care. We want to make sure people understand that's not the case. We're talking only about mental health, drug and alcohol, and physical health. We are not talking about the monies going into long-term care for people. There are some overlaps there occasionally. You can't completely separate those two, and we recognize that. But for the most part, that's not the discussion. The rest of the discussion tonight is a very thorny issue we really want to get input from the committee on, and that's the makeup of this board. We got lots of questions about that over and over again. Who's on the board? What's that board look like? How does it get set up in the first place? Is it set up that way every time? Is the board self-perpetuating? What is your vision here? So we want this to be a fairly free-flowing discussion tonight. Understanding that we are still working on a final draft to be able to bring back to this committee and then have further discussion on that final draft. So this is something that is set here to push off against, to have discussion about. And I would direct us first to talking about what the makeup of the board is as far as who's on it in the second half, how that board's appointed and how that board is maintained. So what I'd like to do first, if possible, if there's not any questions immediately on it, is bring up public testimony first and have a discussion second, if that's comfortable for committee members. Seeing no one opposite to that thought, I'd like to bring up Jim Russell and Gina Nickel. Are you coming up together? You each have 2 minutes.
Gina has four.
Take your time. We want to hear your thoughts.
Well, good evening, chairs, members of the committee. I've got to acknowledge how humbling it is to sit in front of you and offer any thoughts at all. I appreciate the couple of decades that a couple of you have in a public service arena in terms of improving health care in Oregon, and many of you are deeply connected with health care. So still, that said, I do have some thoughts and questions. Even closer, you said?
And make sure you stay close to the microphone.
All right.
Okay. Did you have a chance to identify yourself yet?
My name's Jim Russell. I'm the director for one of the mental health organizations in the Oregon Health Plan, the Mid-Valley Behavioral Care Network. And I do have some thoughts about the composition of the trust board. Appreciate the opportunity to share them. I'm not sure that the board membership, as you have it laid out right now, guarantees that you'll have sufficient knowledge and credibility in the area of community mental health care. I do think it's an excellent time to be talking about the relationship between mental health care and general health care. In my field, the alarm bells have been ringing for the last couple of years, noticing that the life expectancy for people with a serious mental illness is 25 years less than the general population. And only a third of that is due to things like accidental death and suicide. It's an epidemic within the epidemics of diabetes and heart disease that we see in the general population. So I'm very concerned about that short life, and I'm glad that we're talking again about health care is related. And I know from talking to the co-chairs that as conversations begin with some of the fully capitated health plans, that they can imagine beginning to deliver more of services that are delivered within the mental health system. But what I wanted to bring to you today is some of the interwoven aspects of the community mental health system, and I'm not intending to be an expert on this, but to raise this issue and really encourage you to make sure that that expertise is accessible to the board, I think, by membership on the board. My thought is that what you have here, the challenge that you have in front of you, I'd like to use the analogy of a diamond cutter. There may be some ways that you can strike this that will create more value. I understand that diamond cutters are well paid and that they have great knowledge in looking at a stone about where to cut that to achieve a favorable result. But they're well educated about the composition of that diamond to succeed with that. So I distributed a matrix, and just some thoughts that I put together this afternoon. I please take careful note of that caveat at the bottom. An illustration. I'm not intending this to be a complete or authoritative statement about community mental health care. And then secondly, this only regards adults. I haven't tried to describe children's mental health services with this. So if you look under column 1, on the left-hand side you have the service recipient. And under column 1, as you start at the top, you can see, oh yeah, somebody familiar with health care would know how to arrange individual therapy, medication management. Certainly the coordination with other health services could be improved by a general health care provider. As we get into supported housing, supported employment, supported education, and the whole range of skills that it takes to stay viable in the community, community tenure skills of budgeting, shopping, food preparation, using public transport, social activities, connection with the spiritual community, those are going to be more of a strain. And then if you look at column 2, these are services that are woven in a community mental health program that I think would be a surprise to general health care providers to even contemplate picking up some of those responsibilities. And they are very detailed. I gave Rick a document believing that you wouldn't all need your very own copy. But if you look at the statute 430.630, it goes on for 5 pages about the responsibility of a community mental health program. Now, in 1997, when mental health services were rolled out across the state by a competitive request for proposal process, the state determined that they would award the lives for mental health care to fully capitated health plans where that award was not in a proportion that would threaten the viability of a community mental health program. So their decision at that time was to leave the diamond hole. I acknowledge there may be good reason to change that, and I invite you to do that with care. There's a second aspect that I want to point out with regard to the statute I already mentioned. 436.10 lays out the legislative intent in creating local mental health authorities and goes by further on in 630 describing those 5 pages of responsibility. To carve those away from the local mental health authority is a significant policy step step, and I'm sure it would require statutory changes to be able to do that. So in my close, I just would like you to approach this with a great deal of knowledge about the community mental health system and thinking about how you want to divide that. And I would encourage you to have that knowledge right on this board.
Questions? I've got two for you real quick. First off, you're talking about a epidemic within an epidemic, and that means taking care of people's hypertension and heart disease and diabetes, pick your disease, who also have a comorbidity in mental health.
That's right.
What I don't see here is integration, a request for integration of physical and mental health. We've carved those out separately for too long, and we need to bring those together again. Yeah. It's going to be very difficult to do.
Right.
And I would hope that you would not be opposed that we slowly and carefully move to that kind of integration, because if we don't do it, we will not solve the other problems.
Yeah, absolutely. And I spoke to that point first. I'm very concerned, and I'm working in other forums about that.
Because I just don't see it in your matrix here.
Yeah.
So that was my first concern. The second question is, we are envisioning the potential for at least 5 subcommittees working on very specific parts of healthcare that would report to the board, and including a very professional staff with the kind of knowledge you need to make these decisions. And to use your metaphor, I would say that they're the ones cutting a diamond and presenting the jewels to the board.
Okay.
Okay, and, you know, I would think that if we try to put the board together in a way that every single facet of healthcare is represented, we have to have a cardiologist, have to have a gastroenterologist, have to have a psychiatrist, have to have an orthopedist, and we would never get there. And what we need is subcommittees that can do a very good job in doing that and then bring it to the board. And I think it can be done in a way that people can understand, as even as laymen on the board. Would that give you some reassurance that you were being properly heard and looked at carefully on a professional basis?
That may be entirely satisfactory.
Thanks. That's kind of where I think we're.
I mean, as this reform effort has moved forward, I've been feeling like most of these issues could be addressed in the implementation, not in the statute. But when I noticed that you were hearing tonight about the composition of the board, I felt it was an appropriate time to raise these issues.
I couldn't agree more. Senator Westland especially, and I support him in talking. He has a vision of safe harbors for discussion. Safe harbors inside those subcommittees where a really good discussion can occur and people feel comfortable in really expressing what they need to have done. So I appreciate your testimony.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? Gina.
Chair Westland, Chair Bates, committee members, for the record, my name is Gina Nickel. I'm the director of the Association of Community Mental Health Programs. Again, addressing Section 2, I'll state really what Jim stated. I just wanted you to think about having an MHO representative or a local mental health authority on the board. Senator Bates, I appreciate what you said, and that might be a way to get to it. What wasn't mentioned was an addictions specialist. My main concern also is addictions cuts across everything that we do, every service provider that we have, everything that all of you take a look at servicing. So please make sure that you include addictions in that. Under the goals section, Section 4, that's the first item I have is integrated care, mental health and primary care, taking a look at what that individual's needs are. I always say we are a spiritual, mental, physical, and emotional being, and it's hard to tear that apart and treat just one without looking at the whole person. Also, I was wondering where these goals fit, because as you look at mental health and addictions, you really do have to look at supported education and supported employment and supported housing. That's an integral part to helping people get well if they have that hanging over their head, with other diseases too, if they're worried about hospital costs and not being able to stay at a Ronald McDonald House. The other one is 24/7 crisis. We can't expect to do all our mental health care in a regular 24/7 crisis, such as a hospital. That's the more expensive part, so we need to be thinking about that. And the oversight, and it sounds like that might be something that we can do on a committee that informs the group, but we just wanted to get that on the record and bring that to your attention. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions?
Just a comment, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
For the past, in my committee, the Health Policy Committee, we started listening about the master plan for the hospital, as well as now we started addressing community mental health issues. And there is an energy. I just want you to know there is an energy to finally start addressing the mental health problems. And I think in this state, which we have woefully neglected for decades and decades, well, forever, actually, it has been. So I applaud them because I know what they're saying. And when you look at this board, it's people that are very interested in the medical model that we have already had. And so when we look at the nurse, physician, and consumer, too, we have to look to make sure that they are maybe diverse in their views on mental health.
Yes. Senator Morissette.
What about wellness? Prevention? Have we thought of that?
Co-chair, Senator Morissette. Of course, prevention is an overarching goal that we'd like to shift the main care to. It would be nice if we could prevent everything so we don't have to spend a lot of money on the other end. So, of course, we would include wellness and prevention.
Senator Westland.
Thank you both for being here. A couple comments. I mean, one, I think we need to, and this will come up in the committee discussion, but we've got to remember that what we're setting up is not a board of, you know, professional expertise. I mean, we'll have that capacity underneath the board, but people that are capable of making decisions regarding the efficacious delivery of services, you know, across the spectrum. One of those that goes, you know, unmentioned, and we always talk about just the egregious underfunding, lack of funding for MH and A&D, one of those areas that we continue that gets swept under the rug before all the rest gets swept under the rug is our mental health services and addiction services to seniors. I mean, it's one of those areas.
For seniors.
One of those areas that's one of the, you know, highest demand for services. You know, and this gets into workforce. I mean, being able to have clinicians and providers that are capable of dealing with that segment of the population that, you know, mess the raging, you know, buzzword. We got to deal with meth addicts. We got to deal with A&D stuff. Well, there's a lot of people out there that have touched all the bases, have, you know, been good, productive citizens for years, and, you know, for all the reasons that mental illness is such an insidious, subtle disease, they don't seem to get the attention they should. So I just want to bring that to the committee's attention as well as point that out for the listening audience.
Thank you, Senator Westland. I'll make a couple comments real quickly. Many of us have a vision that this board is going to be a management board in some ways. It will start bringing together diverse parts of the healthcare system that no longer speak to each other, sort of integrating services. What you've talked about here is actually what we call wraparound services. So it's more than just giving someone some pills. It's more than putting them in a mental health facility. It's supporting them in many ways to keep them in their local community. The Mental Health Caucus has been meeting every week, and I think that's what Senator Mons Anderson is talking about, and that those bills are to come to her committee to work. That kind of an integrated system, both vertically and horizontally, is what we need to do for health care if we're going to be truly effective in producing wellness. and preventing huge costs at the other end. What we often call preload or preventative care. We know that intervention early in a psychiatric illness is the most important time we can do it. And then supporting that person on through is important. And that's true of diabetes, hypertension, heart disease, whatever you want to talk about. And that support continues, as Senator Westland has talked about, for the seniors. And so it has to be an integrated system that works and functions better than what we've got. And it also is more cost effective. It saves huge amounts of money. I am very concerned the big box mental health institutions we're talking about building, which we need to build, are going to be overrun within a few years of them opening up if we don't have strong local community mental health. Without that, we will never be able to get our hands around this thing, and we've not had a integrated system that works, and it's been very fragmentary. The individual that comes in with a psychiatric break into one hospital emergency room, stabilize for a few days, and give them 5 or 6 days of medication, and go back to community health. They don't get in for a couple of weeks because community health is swamped, and they're back in the emergency room before they ever made their appointment. They have no place to live, no way to get decent nutrition. If they're diabetic or something else along the way, just more trouble. And just the cost is just steamroll. If they don't commit a crime, end up in our criminal justice system. So I think I've heard you. I hope you've heard us. Well, we want to change the system dramatically, and you guys are a good illustration of where we need to go. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for coming tonight. And I'll probably get this name wrong, but I think it's Mark Connect. Is that correct, Mark?
Good evening, members of the committee and Senator Weston. My name is Mark Connick, and I had an appointment today with one of Ben Westland's aides up there. He was very nice, very knowledgeable, and I appreciate Ben's hard work and all your work that you're doing for health care. I want to bring to you two things. I am diabetic, and I get my medication paid for by the VA. And I was lucky that they got me on that program. And then when I have to dispose of my syringes, I have to take them over to the sanitation department. And it cost me somewhere, a box cost me, the disposable box, when I take it back, cost me about $14. But I only do that about once every 4 months. And I have to pay that out of my pocket. Medicare and Medicaid won't reimburse me for that. And another thing I want you to know, the morning of the big fire up in Portland when the Baptist church burnt down, we had, not that this makes any difference to you people, but we had a veteran get on the 9th floor of the Veterans Hospital up there and jump off the building and commit suicide. But the veterans have to take care of the veterans. But I am just stating a fact here, because if we don't take care of health care needs like what happened up there, we will see some more of that. Now, here about 5-6 years ago, Mrs. Gordley upstairs had a bunch of Oregonians here, and I'm sure you are well aware that in this state, down through the years, there has been at least 100 people, maybe more, of people with mental illness that have committed suicide, because they just feel that there's no help because they have not been properly taken care of. But I just wanted to make these two issues known to you, and I know there's a lot more at stake, but I just wish somehow that Medicare and Medicaid could help dispose of those syringes, because when I have to dispose or pay that out of my pocket, then next year on my taxes I'm going to write that off as expenses for next year, because they won't reimburse me out of my pocket for that. But otherwise, the VA is doing a good job paying for my medicine. And then I would, why can't the state order medicine in bulk like the VA does? When they send me my medicine, well, I get it 3 months at a time, so a supply of medicine lasts me 90 days. And it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to ship the medicine, to have it manufactured in Canada, and then bring it back here in the States. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Mark, you've asked questions that we can't have any control or answer for you.
Okay? I know they're working on trying to get it in bulk, like blood pressure pills and different things like that. I know you're trying to do all that, but
there's lots of programs out there trying to answer those questions, but at the present time, we're probably going to stay with 30 days in the Medicaid program. We have no control over the VA, but I would suggest to you that you do what a lot of my patients do and take those syringes back to the VA when your next visit comes up. They have ways of disposing of them there. I just about bet they take care of it for you. But you got to take them back when you have your quarterly visits with them for your.
I can't hear very well out of this one year. You said something about.
Well, you probably go to the VA on a quarterly basis every 3 months, right?
Yeah.
When you go there, take those syringes back with you. They have a way of disposing them there. I just about bet they do that for you.
Yeah, the VA, if I take them down there, dispose them. But I just want to be sure that they're in the proper container. But it's just the thing that if I don't take them back to the sanitation company and the company, I mean, I still have to go buy another box. Now, I can go up to Walgreens and buy a box up there for about $3 to $5, depending on where I get it, and they'll hold about 300 syringes. But they're a little bit smaller than what I've got. But
well, we thank you for your testimony tonight.
Yeah.
Good luck. Any questions?
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks for coming. That's all we have for open discussion tonight, so I'm going to turn it back to the committee now. I want to talk about...
Well, does anybody else want to testify? Yeah, see?
Good point.
If you know how to run a committee, Bates.
That's what I like, support from my co-chair.
Hi, my name is Marcia Kelly, and I'm here for the American Association of University Women of Oregon. And just a couple of things that we've noted. I'm sitting with our public policy chair for the state. There's no designation for geographic location, and I think that needs to be looked at carefully because following the 2005 session, we went on a tour of our branches in Eastern Oregon, Ontario, Baker City, Wallowa County, and Pendleton. And they have unique medical issues, partially because of their location and their utilization of hospitals in Washington, hospitals in Idaho. So it would be really helpful if you had some people on the committee that were from a geographical diversification. And I've also noted that although it says up to 15 people, you've noted 12 that need to be represented. But dental is not one of those, but it is very integral to people's health. So you may want to consider something in that area, that remember the geographical locations, because being a hospital person in Ontario or Pendleton is really different than being in Providence in Portland. And let's not just have it up and down the freeway.
Okay. Good point. It was interesting that Representative Maurer actually brought that up to us last week and said, what are you doing about geographical locations in this board? And we are starting to put that in language also. So you're reinforcing what the good representative brought up for us last week. Mm-hmm. And I had actually failed to think of that, and so I appreciate his input on that. The other thing we're talking about also, we'll just hand it to me, is what about ethnic and racial diversity on this board also? That will also need to be a factor.
And, you know, with the changes that are happening and the professionalism, I'm sure that you can attach it. But I think that there has to be some way, if the governor's office would be making all of these appointments, that there's something either in statute or something in the legislative intent to make sure that does happen. Because, you know, we don't want to forget those people. I was born in Bend, and at one point we were, you know, called nowhere.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony tonight. Thank you
well,
for
Marcia
coming this
evening.
Well,
Marcia should give you some comfort that we're thinking about housing and locating the board in either halfway Ione or French Glen. So you know, Bates wants halfway. I want French Glen, and
we want it geographically centered in the state.
Yeah.
Okay.
It would keep you away from all of the advocates / lobbyists.
I think it'd probably depoliticize it really fast. Okay. Thank you for your testimony tonight. Oh, I'm sorry. Do you have a question?
Well, no, I just have a reinforcement. One of the things that I had talked about earlier is kind of an overlay of the state to find out which services are available and where the gaps are, because rural Oregon will have gaps, and I think it is incumbent on us to make sure we fill the gaps. And that may cost some money to put a clinic in a place that currently doesn't have one, and so that's the responsibility of the plan, is to make sure there is equal coverage around the state. And the second thing I want to reinforce is the wellness aspect of this program. I think we would be remiss if we didn't have a very strong voice for wellness, particularly in senior citizens. I'm currently reading Dr. William Wild's latest book on aging.
That's excellent.
And the body changes and the needs change, and you know, you may not add years, but you're going to add quality to the years that you have left. And I think that is absolutely important. And unfortunately, PEB cut their wellness program we didn't fund it for this last biennium, and they had a good program in for public employees, but we do need to emphasize wellness in this program.
And I do agree with you about rural, but if you sit through the presentations on health care in Oregon, you know that there's not only rural, but there's also frontier Oregon. And so all of those entities need
That's
to
where
have
French
some
Glen
sort of
comes
say.
In. French,
yes.
Yeah, we'll put a clinic in French Glen.
Thank you very much, Marcia. Appreciate your testimony. As the co-chair so kindly reminded me, I want to make sure we don't miss anybody else who would like to speak tonight. Yes, please come forward. Okay. Could you say your name and spell it for us, please?
Stephen Sherrick, Sherick. I'm an emergency medicine resident physician at OHSU. And I just wanted to make a quick comment in terms of the members of the board, in terms of the number of care providers. I feel like in a lot of issues it's going to come up where the physician and the nurse as well, and being the people who've been on the ground in terms of treating people, will have a tremendous amount of power on the board, because there'll be times where a lot of the other representatives might throw up their hands and say, well, I've never been there. I'm not quite sure. And just asking the committee to be very cognizant of the amount of power that they're going to have, and not necessarily increasing the number of providers to increase their power, but more to increase the diversity of opinion that you're going to have. Those members, does that make sense?
It does. Thank you. And I would again tell you that it's very likely that there would be at least 5 subcommittees, and those subcommittees will be presenting policy to the board, and there'll be a chance for a tremendous amount of input at that level, as well the board level. Okay. Thank you for your time. Thank you. Thanks for coming tonight. Any questions? Anyone else like to speak? Feel free. Thank you. Thanks for audience participation. Can we turn for a moment now back to the makeup of the actual board? Ben, I'm going to ask you to start this off. You and I have had long conversations about this. Would you like to present your view of this?
Well, I've already
which is always mine.
I've already articulated this from this dais and pretty much now all over the state. And I will allow that. As we first embarked on this, you know, adventurous journey, quite frankly, I was thinking, well, you know, what's the composition of the board? And kind of the political thing and the safe thing to do was to, you know, include as broad a spectrum of all parties as you could, and that way, you know, quite frankly, you get buy-in from those segments. They feel comfortable because they've got a representative on the board. And while I think there is still some reason to include various stakeholders on the board, and I classify us all as stakeholders. I think the real answer to who should be on the board is best answered by answering this question, which is, who does that board represent? And I will allow that my opinion is that that board represents consumers and payers. Those people that pay the bills and consume the services. Not the people that get the money. Not the providers. And I think that creates a very healthy tension among, you know, sincere, forthright, well-intentioned people as they're making management decisions that affects the health of all Oregonians. It's not that there won't be, quote, provider representation, but the preponderance of that board should be made up of those individuals that are paying the bills and receiving the services. Somehow that just seems right to me. Let's not forget that underneath that board there will be, you know, a very competent professional staff to render opinions on this efficacy versus that, or putting the clinic in French Glen versus halfway. Yeah, I'm serious. I mean,
good.
I think that creates a more rational decision-making process that really, at the end of the day, affects each and every one of us. So that.
Thank you, Ben. I asked Ben to lead that off because we've been talking about that on the state for the last week, what that board should look like. We get that question, and frankly, for the most part, I agree with Ben. I also had the experience of speaking to both past and present board members for the Asante system, which represents two hospitals. And as I looked around the room and talked to these people, I realized that's been a very successful board over the last 20 years, made up of local members of the community, physicians, nurses. But as I looked at the mix, it was primarily, I thought, people in the business world and some consumers that were running those boards. And if you want to look at a model that's been successful, that one, overall, has been successful. And I think it's very similar to what Ben's talking about. But we need to hear what the rest of the committee members think about this. And please chime in. Ben?
Thank you. I was actually going to...
Well, Representative Cannon, I'm
sorry. Oh, Ben's fine. I was actually prepared to argue for not having any designations whatsoever, except perhaps direction to the governor to consider some of the following when he or she made their appointments. And the reason is, I believe that a board that has sort of powers this broad and is asked to think this broadly about the healthcare system should not come to its duty primarily as representatives of a particular interest, but rather representatives of the public interest and the greater interest of the healthcare system generally. And I'm a little hesitant to suggest that someone should be called on for their expertise in nursing or their expertise in southwestern Oregon or their expertise in labor. And more enamored with the idea of asking smart people who care about wellness in Oregon to come together to build a system that saves money and produces better outcomes. I think that your and Ben's notion here is at least largely consistent with what I'm saying, and I would be comfortable with this kind of designation, this kind of appointment to the board.
Thank you. Comments from anybody else? Representative Maher.
Thank you. Sitting here, one of the in conversations we've had in the past is you make a comparison to the Federal Reserve Board and how that's composed. And sitting here looking at these designations, I see, and I'm wondering, because I don't know, does the Federal Reserve Board appoint citizens to the board. These are all economists that I'm assuming that are appointed to the Federal Reserve Board. And so I think if you're looking at a structure for longevity, I think that may be applicable, but in this case, I think that you're not. And actually, Representative Cannon it kind of jumped over a bunch of hurdles for me in just about 20 seconds in his observation, because in a lot of ways, I think it's not about coming in and representing a specific interest, but it's about what's best for the state of Oregon. And to that tune, when we are going to pay these people, because this is, there has to be a salary affixed, at least that's the way it's presented here. I would much prefer to have fewer people that were compassionate, caring, and knowledgeable than to have a bunch of people that we diluted the pool for. So I'm going to have to take Representative Cannon's words and think about them, but I certainly do not dismiss them out of hand.
Dennis Richardson, Representative Richardson.
I was looking for an analogy that we could use, and I recall the PERS board and the PERS problems that we had in 2003 that was a result of 10 or 20 years of problems with the PERS board and a number of things. And one of the situations or the result of one of the changes was to have a new PERS board that was limited in number and did not have a direct conflict of interest. To have a large number of this board be represented by people who are receiving the benefits is an inherent conflict of interest. And so, not that their opinions shouldn't be heard, but I think that we need to be wise in how we approach it. And I think that what the PERS board did was to have knowledgeable citizens who were experienced make up that board. I mean, there was representatives from across, but the goal, I don't think, should be to have representation from each of the advocacy groups, because then you just have advocates, which is what I think what we don't want. What we want is a wise approach of what's going to be done for the best interests of Oregon, and I would think a high percentage of knowledgeable citizens who will have access at the board will have access to expertise, and that they will be able to utilize that in coming up with a rational plan, but that it needn't be just a large number of taxpayers and a large number of those that receive these benefits, because then it becomes too much of a self-interest approach instead of a best for Oregon approach.
Well, let me ask a question just to make sure I'm clear, because I'm making kind of notes about this. clearly, what we're talking about is a board that would be made up of people who are paying the bill, as we've talked about. When you say you're receiving the benefit, are you talking about the providers or the actual, I'll call them patients or people who would receive the benefit of the plan from the point of view of medical care?
Well, what I was referring to specifically would be the patients, those that are just receiving the medical care, because they have an inherent stake in the outcome that is not necessarily going to be based on what is economically feasible, what's fiscally responsible, and all those other concerns. I also believe that having advocates is for their own positions or their own industry is not, it's a two-edged sword. Without them, you have a real problem getting anything through. But if they're on the board and they're there to advocate for their position, then it's not, I mean, they've got an inherent conflict of interest. Well, so I think that whatever you do, it becomes very difficult to come up with an unbiased, knowledgeable board that can get the information and put it into something that's doable.
I'm going to ask a question a little bit differently for you, because I don't think I'm quite getting there with you. I want to make sure I understand you. I'm not disagreeing or disagreeing, but I want to make sure I understand you. There's no one we can put on this board that would not receive a benefit from it, because we're all going to need health care. Okay? every Oregonian. I can't imagine anyone on this board who would not ultimately get a benefit from it, potentially. Okay, but I think what you're saying, when you're talking about the general public who might individually receive that benefit, you're separating them from an advocacy group who would say, I'm advocating for this group of the general public. I mean, because there's nobody on the board that couldn't someday receive a benefit. But I think what you're saying is, if you have members on this who represent, let's say, consumers, you don't want an advocate in that position. You want someone from the general public who might be a consumer.
That's correct.
Okay. I want to make sure I clear that. Thank you. Representative Greenlee.
Senator, thank you. When Senator Westland said he thought you determine the makeup of the board by relating to who's served, in a sense, it strikes me that you really need to determine the makeup of the board by asking what its task is. Because in a certain sense, you need to create a group of individuals that can do what they're supposed to do. And when I read the tasks as in Section 4 of the 312 draft of Senate Bill 329, there are a set of 7 tasks, and it can be something else, but these tasks are sort of like what the board's going to have to create, although ultimately, I mean, you may have two boards. You may have one to design the program, one to administer it, but design the program, you have to write coverage, you have to find a set of services to every resident in the state, you reduce unsustainable health care cost increase, you shift to a system of public and private health care partnerships and integrate public involvement, you use proven models of health care benefits, service deliveries that control costs and overutilization with emphasis on prevention. You restructure the healthcare system. You resist the sirens. You clean, staying in stable. You do all these quite impossible individual and certainly impossible all put together tasks. And, you know, it sort of takes you back to Odysseus and the journey that he faced in order to be able to come home. I mean, it seems to me every one of these tasks is quite enormous. So what you sort of need is a board made up of superhuman people of some kind. Maybe example of the Sanhedrin, the ancient Hebrew judges, might be a sort of example, or I suppose the Continental Congress that defined the American Constitution had a similar kind of problem. So we need Thomas Jefferson in one seat, Adams, Franklin, Hancock, Madison, Marshall. I mean, you can imagine the board made up of those kind of folks. What we need is wise people. And I don't know how you define that, but I think President Cannon was onto something. It's certainly not by representing the Hospital Association. Everybody knows nobody wise has ever represented the Hospital Association. Bishop here, who's here?
The gnome from Beaverton?
The gnome from Beaverton? Still here?
Thanks for that. That'll move this. Now that we move this bill right along, that's okay.
Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing, Mitch. That's hey, exactly Mitch, what
nice.
I was
Let's see. Where's the OMA?
The wisdom?
I see the insurance industry. Let's get them in this tar and feather them all before we're through.
I think the reason the Federal Reserve model has been indicated here is that what it is a group of people who are citizens basically that nobody knows, but that are selected for their intelligence and their wisdom and then isolated from the day-to-day pressures. I mean, you would hope every one of these people would only have to meet on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday with a lobbyist from noon to 4 or something, I mean, so they can get their job done. I mean, we need to structure something, and I'm sort of rambling, but really what I'm trying to get to is that we really need to find a set of extraordinary people and put them in a position where they can be enough isolated from the pressures, from the ordinary pressures, so they can step back and kind of deal with a really kind of major task we're handling. Now, it strikes me human beings have the ability to grow into the kind of tasks you give them, and it would seem to me, I think we need to probably not put too much structure on what the nature of the board is in terms of defining CA, CB, CC, but talk about some of the kind of characteristics, and one of its experience with the healthcare system, including experience providing healthcare. You know, one of it is dealing with the citizens and knowing what the citizens want. The other is, you know, a lot of statesmanship in this thing. Probably need some management expertise. I mean, you can imagine if you could go out and find the 15 people probably who would be very special and have the characteristics of the board. That's what we need, because we're handing them a quite extraordinary task, I think, in this.
I agree. You know, one of the things that Senator West and I have talked about for a long time is the point you're, I think, you're trying to make, is to try to make this board as apolitical as possible. And that's really important. I think what we should do is contact the U.S. Supreme Court, ask them if they just take a year off. Just give us a year and come down here and do this for us, okay?
I thought about that, but there are a couple of appointees on the Supreme Court.
That you worry about, right?
Yeah, I don't think I would want.
But I think your point is, well, the point serious. The point you're serious, yeah.
Yes.
The point you're really trying to make.
Stupid.
Well, after they get on the court, they seem to do things differently. But point being that you want this to be apolitical. I think that's what I'm hearing you say there. And that's what I'm going to keep in my mind and drive to.
Wisdom. I mean, it seems to me wisdom is the key.
Hard thing to measure.
Very hard.
Senator.
I just want to ask Mitch a question. I mean, I appreciate and applaud his comments very much. Yeah, we keep. You know, we've got 12 in the bill, and, you know, we're futzing around with 15. Give me a number. What do you think's
18.
18.
18 is the magic Hebrew number. It's what I use for everything.
I could take that number and get you in all kinds of trouble.
The total amount that's been divisible by 18 or added to 18.
Well, how about 9?
Well, that's half 18. That works.
We and that becomes a prime number so that we can actually get a decision made. Senator Morissette.
Well, I think we can find those people within these categories. We need some expertise. I think we can find the people within the categories. We need the expertise that comes from the categories. I think what we have to concentrate on is the criteria of selection. I don't think because you're a physician or a nurse or whatever that you're necessarily going to be there to protect your interest. I think that the nature of this is to build something that's greater than the sum of all of the parts, and that's what people are there for. So I just think it's important that someone can say, okay, you're missing something in this discussion, and bring something to that discussion that they are an expert in. So I don't have a problem with the classifications. I think that there should be oral health, not necessarily a dentist, but oral health. I think that covers dentistry, and I think there should be a strong case made for wellness. But I think the categories are fine. It's just how we select people.
Yeah, but Bill, we know there are no wise people in the hospital deal. So, I mean,
well, I'm more concerned about the OMA.
If you take me as an example, I think we do have a problem with physicians potentially, but let's not go there, okay?
No, I was looking at the OMA lobbyists.
Oh, further thoughts? Because I have two more issues we need to talk about. Actually, three more issues to talk about when we're talking about the board. One of those issues.
Excuse me. Just one last comment on that. My reaction to what Senator Morissette just said. The problem of bringing representatives is not that they're not wise. The problem of bringing representatives of dentistry and medicine and pharmacy and hospitals and consumer advocates is that they all bring a fixed point of view with them. And it takes a long time and a lot of quiet deliberations for them to step out of the baggage that they bring with them in terms of a fixed point of view. It seems to me it's useful to bring people who can look at the problem from a lot of different perspectives. And, of course, it's hard to find people without a fixed point of view.
I think the edges will be rubbed off.
Pretty quickly, huh?
Yeah, I think maybe.
Further discussion on this topic. Hearing none, I want to move forward. Three other issues involved on the board that we have to at least have some input on. One of the suggestions has been when you follow a program like the Federal Reserve Board, they have regional boards. And those regional boards are geographical across the United States. There was a suggestion that if we followed the idea of a Federal Reserve Board, we'd have this board and under it in different regions of the state, boards that would handle local community affairs in a way that they have the same policies going back and forth between them, just as the Federal Reserve does. And that would bring in that geographical look we need. And I think of one for different parts of Eastern Oregon, different parts of the coast, Tri-County area, but different parts of the Love Valley. You could talk about four or five different regions the state is made up of and do that. I'd like to ask others here on this committee if that is something worthwhile considering, or is something is a layer of complexity that we don't need.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I like the idea of regional boards. I still think there needs, we have even pockets, though, within the metro area of Portland that have diverse health care needs. And we have some very strong advocates for the black community who swear we're not meeting the needs, the health needs of the black community. And the same for our rural areas. And we just had Gina and Jack, was it Jim Russell, on the mental health. And when you can get down to a small, that's why I sort of like the idea of the mental health authorities, because they become more regionalized. I still think, though, that you sort of need a big board to start out with. But like what Bill Moore said, we do. The work's going to get done at the local levels, and they truly can identify the needs of each of the areas. So I think it's worth discussing.
I'd say we should follow the Federal Reserve System exactly. We should have 9 boards for every 350 million citizens of the state.
50 million. Yeah. We might have one board then, and we'd encompass that a little later.
That's the way the math comes out.
Pretty close math.
Yeah. One for every 350 million. Thanks for your help, Mitch. I appreciate that. Okay. I'll do the math a little later.
That was quite a witty comment.
Yes.
Well, the FCHIPs are regional, and they do a good job in their region. And, you know, there's a community of interest there, and I think that's a model. And what are we going to do with them? Are we going to overhaul? To what extent are we going to build on the current system? To what extent are we going to change it around and make everybody nervous, upset, rebellious, in opposition to? So we have to take a close look at the existing system, and where it works well, we have to keep it. And we have to expand it to where it doesn't exist. And there are gaps out there. So whether or not the internal mechanism of the existing geographical system is the same, the provider system should be kept intact.
Other thoughts? Well, I didn't get a clear answer, but I'm going to think about some more myself. Okay? The Safe Harbor committees we're setting up, for sure, and this may be adequate. They may not be adequate. Mons Anderson, I think I heard you pretty clearly thinking this was an appropriate way to go with regionalization. I have a tendency to agree with you, but I'd like to hear what others have more to say. Representative Richardson first.
I think that Marcia Kelly, when she spoke, brought up the fact that, you know, like Ontario, when you get close to the borders in a rural area, there are some real different considerations, in that it would be wise to have, it doesn't have to necessarily be laying out every corner of the state, but that we need to have there be regions represented because of the health considerations and the needs when you're close to borders and those versus rural versus urban. So I think it makes sense.
Okay, thank you.
Could I take another crack at it?
And Senator Westland, second. Go.
LIPA, Lane Regional Independent Practice Association of Lane County, along with a number of other providers, have created health 100% access. And so it's an expanded system that works extremely well for Lane County. And that should be the basis, and that should be used as a model, because there are a lot of other organizations that have come in. There's a lot of volunteer work going on. And I think that's the other secret of success, is that we've got to create a system that allows people to locally become involved and take pride and do their part, because they will want the system to succeed. And so to build on the existing regional systems and to expand them, I think, is the key to success.
Thank you. Senator Westland.
Well, I want to comment on the regional board concept. I think what we're trying to do is get excellent input from areas of the state that obviously have a different capacities and different healthcare needs. And I think that's our first kind of inclination. Well, let's do some regional approach, which I think has merit. But I would also like us as a committee to think about how can we do that. And what got me thinking about this is Senator Morris Anderson's comment about Portland. There's five different challenges in Portland. So how can we weave into the structure of a single board, you know, an honest, legitimate ability for the representation of different geographic needs? I mean, more than just say, okay, we're going to show up and testify, you know, Ione's going to show up, and, you know, Southern Oregon's going to show up, and a couple communities on the coast are going to show up. How do we do that? That's what we're really struggling with here. Yeah.
Another comment? What I'm taking away from bits and pieces of this is that we need regional and ethnic diversity in the board itself, and some type of way of dealing with regional issues underneath that, whether it be by actual regional organizations or a committee that deals strictly with regional needs. We'd have to get there one way or the other. So we will think about that further.
So are you going to propose several different models and then debate those models?
I believe the way I would go about this, and I plan to go about this, and the co-chair agrees, is we will produce a document, and then we can debate that document when we get it out. And I expect we'll have that document out within a week to a week and a half. I would hope we have started a robust discussion on Monday night about this. But I needed a little bit of a feel from this committee to what that initial document at least should look like. And I think I'm getting a feel of what the committee wants here. There, what comes out next week may well be subject to significant change, but at least we can at least start with a conversation where I have some feeling what the committee would like to see. I trust the judgment of this committee and the ability of this committee to have innovative ideas, and that's what I'm trying to gather tonight. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Morissette.
Have you solicited input from the various local organizations about what they think?
I've done that from two groups only
in
my spare time.
In terms of the structure, I mean, okay, and or anybody else who wants to make some kind of a schematic to graphically show what they think would be the best organizational structure. And Phyllis gave me a note here about the long-term care system, you know, whether it's effective at the state level, the county level. There are systems out there. And what my goal all along has been is to try to get a handle on some of the systems that are actually working around the state and find out if they are models for statewide or if there should be a variety of local models that mesh at the state level. And that would be the board's, one of their jobs is to make sure that all of, to give the maximum local capacity, home rule, so to speak, but to make sure that everything meshes. Because I don't know that one size fits all when it comes to the state of Oregon and the needs of the state of Oregon. So we have to be extremely sensitive to what's already working out there and not offend people right off the bat. That's why you're getting the questions about, are you going to take the Medicaid from long-term care? No, you're not going to do that. You've said that, but people still ask the question because now once we're getting closer, then all of those questions that we thought we've answered is going to start really popping up because people are taking us seriously. So I think to get as much input on structure as we can get would be good. Just ask for a model. Give a prize for the... No, just ask for a model.
As well. Thank you. We might just empower the board to do that itself. Next question is whether or not this we have a transitional board. There's been some discussion about whether or not we set the board up initially, and that's the board that goes forward and functions. Or do we need a transitional board to get that board, gets a lot of this work done and then brings the board in that will be actually be the managed board? Because there's some differences in setting the board up versus going ahead and having the board functioning. I'd like to hear some comment on that, too.
Yeah, I thought I'd comment on that. You really may have two different tasks. One is designing the program, and then the next, as the bill says, administering the program. Those are really different tasks, you know, administering an existing program. But you can leave it open and see how, you know, see how the initial board works.
Any other questions?
What was the plan originally to have some kind of an interim? What's going to happen when the legislature ends and who's going to continue the discussion? Is there going to be an interim group appointed, a task force? Was that
the plan initially is that that this legislature would bring that board forward. And that board would have significant duties and responsibilities immediately. That certain parts of state government would actually come in under that board. The board would have the right to both design and sort of a design build sort of thing. They design, build, and manage. The question came up is whether those tasks are so different and so much more difficult in their own ways that whether we should have a transitional board and then move to a full board. At the present time, we plan to have just one board. But I want to have that discussion here. And if they do it now, then next week after we cut a bill, and I want that discussion. I want to hear what other committee members think.
I would like to reiterate what I said.
Representative Richardson, I'm sorry.
What I said when we first started this, and that is that it's one thing to say that the board needs to be as nonpartisan or apolitical as possible, but it's another thing completely to see that happen. If we look at our commissions, they are not nonpartisan, and they are not nonpolitical. They're selected, those that are on them. And what I said before, I'm fine with the board if I get to choose. That was, of course, I'm being facetious, but to have the governor make those choices will determine from the outset, unless there's some new way to do it, that it will be, I believe, a philosophically directed. And so I don't know how you're going to go about doing this so that we can actually get a cross-section on this board so that you have industry and, I mean, you know, you have different, I don't mean necessarily industry, but you know what I'm saying. We have people that are concerned about free enterprise, maybe more than merely socialized medicine. But for whatever takes place is going to have to, that's going to be acceptable to the people, is going to have a cross-section of philosophical viewpoints, which is part of what Mitch is saying when they say we need wise people on this. We need people that are not overly influenced by an agenda, but have the wisdom to come up with a structure that will meet the needs of all of Oregon, at least a substantial majority, and not merely perpetuate previous philosophies or desires to create a system based under some socialized model. So I don't know how you can do that, but I'm concerned
certain
about it.
Certain boards require the governor to name a balance of Democrats and Republicans. Would that serve this kind of function, or is that
not necessarily? Not necessarily. Look what we've gone through over the rainy day fund and over corporate kicker amounts, and there are groups of, you know, there are some Republicans that are in Portland that do not represent the general rank and file Republicans in the state at all, and so it's not merely party affiliation. And so I don't know how you're going to be able to do this, but it's got to be done. If this is going to be successful, then ultimately what this board comes back with is going to have to be able to pass muster with a majority of the voters, and that hasn't been real successful with tax increases and those kinds of things, and this is going to be touching on several of those kinds of nerves. And so as we discuss the board, that's going to be an underlying kind of an issue, and I'm not sure how you get it resolved.
There's no perfect answer to that, but Senator Westland.
I think one way to get over that over time is you can have the given representative, whether it's a healthcare consumer or a big business, small business, whatever, self-appoint. That position self-appoints themselves in future years. But I don't know, Dennis, how to get over that in the initial appointment.
I would think that a committee of, I mean, it could be a small committee that has representation on that of viewpoints could have something to say about who gets assigned, and it doesn't just get done by, you know, the one person or his healthcare advisors or whoever would be making those decisions.
Well, and then
nominating committee.
Yeah, who appoints appoints the committee, and
that led directly into my third issue on this board and things we're trying to work our way through. It was a great segue, and Senator Westland picked it up. Let's say we do somehow come up with a process of getting the board together the first time around, so to speak. Usual thing, it's 4 years, maybe a second term, and you move on. It's very political. The governor, you know, usually nominates, and the Senate confirms, and it's sort of who's in power now, when and how. And that's not what you want. And I don't think it's what Senator Westland wants, not what I want. My sense of the Federal Reserve Board is that it's long-term appointments. You get put in, you're there for a long time, you retire and the board replaces you. I mean, 10, 12 years. So it has a tendency, I think, to get away from so much of the politics involved in it. If you follow, as an example, against Supreme Court justices, it's amazing how everyone who puts them in, either as liberal or a conservative, is very upset with them later on because they weren't liberal enough, they weren't conservative enough. But they serve for a longer period of time, and they become less political and have more of a chance to identify the people's work. So that's one of the other questions we have to scramble with here. This is a different kind of board, potentially. It may not be set up the way we normally would think of it as being set up, but it's a question for us to discuss. And that's what I want now is a discussion, if we could. Representative Maurer, do you have your hand up there?
Yes. Well, I think most of the commissions in the state of Oregon are unpaid, correct? And Dennis?
That's correct.
Most commissions are.
Well, the
parole board, though, and others are salaried.
And for
there are some salaried.
Depends on the board. It depends. Most is concerned, probably.
It depends on the intensity of the work they're doing and what they're doing.
Because
there are some that are paid and some that are not.
I mean, I think it changes the dynamic. If you're doing it gratis, you're doing it out of a, well, not that you should be doing any of this other than a sense of public interest, but you're doing it as either a political reward or you put in a lot of time serving some other capacity. But this is different. I mean, I truly think that this whole board issue is different, and that the salary does become important because then you can isolate yourself. You're not thrown to the whims of the, you know, which way the wind is blowing. And so I personally think 15 is too many if you're going to have a salary board, more like 7. But and I'm not sure how you get all this representation in 7 people, but to me it just makes much more imminent sense to reduce those numbers and beef up the capacity and keep them there longer. And I think there are more than 7 smart people in the state of Oregon. 9 smart people in the state of Oregon.
I would hope that's the case. Okay.
Wise people.
There's quality and wise.
Yeah.
The concept of some type of a nominating committee might be something to look into.
Mr. Chair. I was thinking that the last task I was involved in this was the naming of of the founding board of the Northwest Health Foundation. It was an attempt to try and create a board. It was a task to start a foundation. It was $70 million or something involved. And it really struck me in the discussions of the original board, political persuasion never, ever wasn't even discussed. I mean, it ended up with at least one other person I know was a Democrat because he'd been elected as a Democrat. But basically, it wasn't even a consideration. It's, you need to find a model that will do that here where it transcends the political.
I would offer it. The Health Service Commission works very much that way too. I've had a long experience with them, and it's been very apolitical.
Yeah.
Northwest Health Foundation would be another model we could look at also, and ones that have seemed to have stayed out of politics. I can think of a lot of boards that have not stayed out of politics, and they are just a battle every time the name comes up. So I understand that. Senator Morissette, you wanted to say something.
Okay. Going from the mega approach that we talked about, that I talked about a little while ago, where you have these positions represented, and if they're going to be, I'll take the other side of it now, if we're going to pay these people, you can't expect a physician, perhaps, or some of the other professionals to give up their life to be part of a board, even though they're paid. The number of people deliberating, I think, is important, and in some cases, the maximum, what's the optimum number? Maybe 5 to 7 would be the optimum number of people who are setting the agenda, and these people should, and I agree that if they are appointed over a longer period of time, and they have advisory committees made up of the professionals that we've been talking about, I think as a governing board, that would be a much more efficient way to go, because it just dawned on me that here you have all of these categories of professionals who first of all, it's too many people to sit around a table to reach a conclusion. Secondly, it'd be too expensive. And thirdly, they may not want to devote that kind of time. So a careful selection of individuals who have a broad interest, a broad background, who can serve and be paid to serve over 8 to 10 years or whatever, I think would be the other model that I think could work.
And I would assume that the committees that would report them would become very important to do the technical and professional work needs to be done for them to make reasonable decisions. I assume that would be part of your vision for it?
Yes.
And those could be more of volunteer-type work, such as the Health Services Commission is. Further suggestions or thoughts? Ben?
Thanks. Small in number, long terms, and appointed by...
God.
I was actually going to say legislative leaders, Senator Bates. Not God, but legislative leaders. I think you get a group of people like...
Who think they're God.
Who think they're God.
Or the Hospital Association. I mean, they're interchangeable.
Who was a doctor? Oh, my God.
I think the people who have been working on this reform, and I mean, I'm not just pointing at you, but including folks in this building who have spent years working on this subject, know who the sort of some of the wisest and brightest folks out there are who have a real passion for this issue. And that's, if there was a way to sort of convene that group, those folks here and say, let's come up with a list. Send that to the governor, perhaps, a nominations list. So,
I'm just writing stuff down, okay?
But I do.
Does anybody have God's phone number?
503.
It's not even an 800 number. I gotta pay. Huh? 888. Right. Well, didn't think it'd be the other one. No?
But Mr. Chair, I like the idea though of this transition board. I don't know if you want to state this as a transition board, and it may end up being the final board. But to get to the number 9, you can decrease 4 representatives of business community to 2, and the 2 representatives of labor organization to 1, and then you have 9.
Okay.
You know, Mr. Chair, as we're sitting here skewering the hospital association, I mean, I don't want to leave. This is great. But these thoughts, you know, maybe the transitional board and Dennis's committee concept can come together. Maybe there's a way to weave that cloth together. You know, now, having said that, this is not the Northwest Health Foundation. This is not, as great as they are, this is not a private entity. And this thing is born of political waters. Our job is to mitigate that influence to the absolute greatest extent possible. Let's not think we're going to get some, you know, process out of a representative democratic process that does not have, you know, political influences. Much as I know each and every one of us don't want that. But maybe there's, again, this transitional board, Dennis's committee concept. I think maybe there's some merit in bringing those ideas together.
And the transitional board will also be responsible for nominating the ultimate board, the board that's going to take over. So it'd be a nominating committee as well as getting this thing started. Form of governors or something, whoever you want to do, you know.
Are we going to create a quasi-independent, quasi-public independent OHSU safe, or is it will it be arm's length from the legislature? Is it a public-private partnership?
I think that the real way to answer that question is how that board is reappointed. If it's reported every 4 years by the Senate and the governor, I think it has a very close relationship, and I think it becomes political. And I would like to see it in the other direction, and that means that it reappoints itself, probably. You might give it legislative intent as far as maybe some categoricals, but at the most, I think that'd be the thing to do. That's the way. I can't think of any other way to get politics out of it. If it's every 4 years, it's going to be politics. Maybe you can't be separated. At least we need to have that thought and that consideration. I have no other thoughts on this board at this moment.
Well, I'm just going to say, Mr. Chair, I'd love to sit here and, you know, bash the hospitals. I wish it was Dave Fiskum as opposed to Jane Ellen. But the you have a very important meeting that you are 12 minutes late for.
I think we're probably a few minutes late already on.
Yep.
I have never had a problem closing a meeting early. I know others of you would like to stay here to the last possible moment. But if you don't have those desires, if there's no further comments, I would like to adjourn us. Thank you very much. Thank you for your time this evening.
That's great.